Hello, my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, joined today with the jokester, the stokester, the wokester, Adam Stoker. How are you, sir?
You know what? I'm incredibly good. And after a few disappointing intros to the show, I think you've really gotten your groove back, and I'm happy to see that.
Yeah, I got some groove going today. I'm very excited about this conversation. This is one of my favorite sparring partners. We had dinner together earlier this year, and it got pretty heated about a really important topic, and that was obviously which is the best Star Wars movie. But welcome to the show, John Gardner. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. And hopefully the conversation won't be as adversarial that we will realize that I was right.
Well, those are fighting words, John, but we'll see. I'll try to be a nice host.
Was the argument, was it over the intelligence of Captain Spock, or what was the conversation?
You know,
about?
That's a really layered joke right there. That's pretty good. People go to the Star Trek Star Wars thing, but saying Captain Spock on top of it is pretty funny. I'll give you kudos for that one.
Thank you. I'm pretty proud of it.
John, we wanted to have you on the show for a while. I got to see you do a keynote at a conference, and you talked about the four I's instead of the four P's of marketing. And so that's going to be the topic today. I'm really excited to hear it. Adam, full disclosure, has not heard this, so he'll be hearing this for the first time along with the audience. But we're looking forward to hearing what the four I's are, debating it, maybe tearing it up like you tear up my feelings about Star Wars, and then we'll hopefully come to some consensus on the other end, and hopefully the audience will learn a thing or two along the way. So that's the plan. Does that sound good, John?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. But before we get to that, John, you're in for a treat. It's the greatest segment in all of entertainment, not just destination marketing, but all of entertainment. It's time for Stu's News. All right, Adam, you're not even talking this time. You just...
Well, I got corrected last time by our guest.
I think the guest said he liked it. So what you're telling me is you're going against the wishes of our audience. And, you know, I'm someone that always likes to be obsessed with our consumer. You know, it's just kind of antithetical to what we stand for here, Adam.
Yeah, well, and listen, it's not discourse unless you've got two people who disagree. And it sounds like you and I disagree on this. And that's okay. I'm good with it.
Well, you're used to diplomatic, Adam. Today's Stu's News segue is... really interesting. So we in Myrtle Beach, we're recording this really the day that I shouldn't have been able to record today. We had a hurricane coming right for us as recently as Friday. You know, we were fully prepared. Our crisis communication team was activated. We were ready to respond to what is now Storm Imelda. At that point, it was I think called just 9. It hadn't been named yet. It was just a number. It was like tropical whatever 9. And we were talking on Friday, and we're very fortunate in that we'd hired someone earlier this year who's our local advocacy person. So he's created a group of an advisory board of local or council of local residents to help us make better decisions for the community. He's helping us with a lot of our local engagement strategies, talking at a lot of community events and civic organizations, things like that. But he also used to be a meteorologist. He was in our market as a weatherman for 12 years. And so really comes with a lot of weather experience and understanding. So it's been really cool having a couple of storms potentially threatening Myrtle Beach this year and having him on staff. And so on Friday, he came to me and said, listen, this is what we're looking at. Here's what the models are showing. All of them are showing that it's going to hit Myrtle Beach, at least in part, except for the AI models. The AI models are showing that this is going to go up a little bit and then go hard east. It's going to take a due east course and get sucked out by the other hurricane that's out there. But none of the human models are saying this, so this is probably not going to happen. And so lo and behold, I sat there over the weekend and watched as gradually what unfolded was precisely what the AI models, and specifically Google's DeepMind model, had projected. And so we've been digging into this, and he shared a couple of articles with me today. So the same thing happened with Hurricane Erin earlier in the year, where the human models showed one trend and the AI models showed another, and the hurricane ended up taking the AI model track. And then I've seen a lot of conversation this morning from meteorologists saying the same thing. So I bring this to the attention to say, I think this is a little bit of a taste of what's to come. You know, it's not, AI is not there yet for marketing. It's not yet there for us to completely automate campaigns. But hurricane model prediction is one of the most complicated math things humans can do, right? It requires supercomputers. It requires crunching of a lot of numbers. And AI, and specifically DeepMind, which is Google's machine learning tool, has done a phenomenal job in the last two major hurricanes at predicting and just kicked the ass at the humans. I mean, I think this is a watershed moment for us as a society, where people are obviously going to start leaning more into giving weight to these AI models. And I think it's a taste of what we have to come with marketing. So Adam, please react to that as you will.
No, this is where I'm really excited for what's coming in the next several months to a year, because I think all of us over the last few years have, I mean, AI creating your content is it's a consequential thing, but when you look at how it's going to impact your decision-making as it pertains to safety of your family, it's not really impacting this. So to me, this is the moment where AI gets real, and we look at the 8 human models that predicted that the hurricane was going to hit Myrtle Beach. And then you've got the one DeepMind AI model that says it's going to go back out to sea. The real question is, when will we look at that difference between the two and have people say, well, you know what? I'm not evacuating. I'm staying home because DeepMind's got me. And then the question is, what kind of chaos could that create if we get to the point where people are trusting the AI more than humans? And let's say nobody leaves and then the AI turns out to be wrong or whatever. I find it fascinating that we're about to be faced with a whole bunch of existential decisions that will need to be made based on the recommendations of AI, especially if they're contrary to what the humans are saying. And how will the people react? We're going to find out over the next several years, but that's fascinating to me.
Yeah, and I want to respond to that. But before I do, John, I don't know if you have a take on this or if you've seen this.
Absolutely. You know, we talk about human in the loop as far as AI, especially in marketing. And so, you know, as I listen to the conversation, definitely see the risk. And, you know, does it come down to quality of data bias or human bias as it relates to modeling? And, you know, whether you extrapolate that into marketing or financial predictions or this, because, you know, a hurricane prediction is exponentially more impactful economically, societally, then am I going to get my content right? And so that is a bell cow for trust in the bias or inherent bias of AI models is fascinating to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, Adam, you touched on something that was important, which is no, you know, we were watching the AI model and it deviated from the human model, but no one was giving it credibility, right? It's not proven, it's not tested. So everyone in our office was still banking on this thing hitting us on Friday, you know, and it wasn't until really late yesterday, Sunday, that we were like, okay, I think we can take a breath, a sigh of relief and trust that this is the model, because everything started to converge around what the AI models were. So I think we're going to see the same with marketing, right? I'm not ready to hand controls of our marketing strategy and the execution of the campaigns over to AI today, but we're going to increasingly over the next few years run parallel. We're going to run like AI simulations, and we're going to have AI recommendations alongside our human recommendations. And at some point, we're going to have the confidence, you know, that we can start to hand over. We're always going to check. We're always going to verify. We're always going to be testing. But with the hurricane thing, you know, we got two really good examples out of the last two that show that AI outperform humans. But what if the third one doesn't, right? Or the
Yeah.
fourth one? So I think we need to build a track record to increase that confidence. But to me, it's a matter of time because the AI models are going to get smarter. And when they do miss the boat, they're going to know why they missed the boat and they're going to adjust accordingly. So it's amazing.
What is so the question is, what is it? Hurricane three, is it? What is the if I bat 300 in the major leagues nowadays, I'm in the Hall of Fame. Is it can is it miss one and we go back to the humans, or is it trends?
Well, that it feels like we're in the early stages of the or early chapters of the sci-fi novel right now, right? Where AI is just starting to outperform humans in some of these models. John, you're asking an interesting question because meteorologists, it's kind of an ongoing joke that you don't have to be very far along to be more right than the meteorologists are in a lot of cases. And that's not their fault. It's just, I think that's a part of that is humans trying to make predictions. And now you have data making those predictions based on a larger number of factors. I don't know. I think you're going to have to start using trends. You can't require AI to bat 1,000 and then go back to trusting humans who are right 50% of the time. I think that's going to be a real challenging thing that we're going to have to overcome.
Yeah, I think at least for the next few years, it's going to be one more factor, right? So if you look at how NHC, the National Hurricane Center, comes out with their projections of where a hurricane's going to go over the next few weeks, they're bringing together multiple simulations of multiple models, right? So Europe has its own model, and different places in Europe, like Germany and UK, have different models. The US obviously has their own models. Now you've got AI models. They run multiple simulations, right? And these all sort of follow a track, and then they find the convergence of those. It's probabilistic. So they're bringing together what's likely going to happen, which is why the further in time you go out with a hurricane, the wider that cone gets of uncertainty. I think what we'll see with this is it will help us to narrow that cone of uncertainty a little further out. So this is exciting for me, and I think we can begin to see how this is going to relate to marketing down the road. So super cool, big win for AI. Doesn't mean humans are now irrelevant. I think it's just again what we've always said, AI can help augment the best humans, right? And so if the best humans are still doing their numbers and then they can use AI to augment their abilities, we're all going to be smarter. We're going to be able to make safer decisions, especially when we're dealing with weather events that can cause mass destruction.
Well,
So
it's exciting. The stakes are going to continue to get higher. And I think that's what's going to be fascinating when you can start to look at, for example, I know there's a lot of AI usage in genetics right now, right? And they're looking at, what proteins or chromosomes are causing different things. And I think when it gets to the point where we have decisions to make for our children, where the doctors say one thing and AI says another, these types of decisions that we're going to have to make are going it's going to be really fascinating to see adoption because it's really easy to adopt, make content faster than I can myself. It's a lot harder to make your existential decisions based on what AI says, even if it's right more.
Yeah, I'll jump in as I've had the fortune over the last couple of years to work with a longtime friend of mine who's now the CEO of a AI diagnostics company. He came from GSK. He ran very at-risk disease, HIV, hepatitis. And this company, his name is Dustin Haines. And his company has developed a way in which to sit on top of the imaging technology for heart disease. And it does not replace the education of the doctor. It makes the doctor more accurate incrementally. And so it's this idea is if a doctor can go from diagnosing 65% of the time to 75% of the times through this, it's reducing that risk. We're getting closer. And I think that's where I'm fascinated by it is the incrementalization and making humans smarter, but it is also allowing another view into a data set.
Yeah, no, couldn't agree more. I think that's where we're going, right? We're sort of co-pilots, we're partners with AI. And I think to go back to Adam's point about the human bias, right? Do we trust the human more than the machine? You just have to look at self-driving cars of where that's playing out, right? Because there's tremendous data on the safety benefits of self-driving cars, but as soon as there's one major incident, then everyone's up in arms and everyone's calling for new regulations and restrictions and stuff, but they're not factoring in all of the lives it saved or all of the accidents that didn't happen as a result of the safer systems. And so I think we're always going to have that human bias. That's natural. And I think it will take some time before marketers are really comfortable. I mean, there's certainly some good companies out there that are doing marketing automation to the next level, but I think for DMOs, being the slow adopters that we are of technology, I think it's going to be a while before we're handing over the keys to let them handle all of our deployment of our resources. So this is a great topic, guys. I wish this was the whole conversation, but we got
Yeah.
an even better conversation to have. So John, I'm going to hand this over to you and sort of let you do your thesis or stump speech a little bit. You've had this framework of the four eyes for several years, and it's something that's served your organization as well, and I'm sure will serve you long into the future. But maybe let's start there. Like, tell us what is four eyes? What how did you come up with it? What the
Perfect.
heck are we talking about now?
I would be shocked if we didn't actually circle back to some of the same themes based on the four I's. So we all in college, or at least me, because I was old enough that they taught us the four P's of marketing a long time ago: product, place, promotion, and price. Holy grail of marketing, and was very in tune to the days, because it came out in the 60s, where the ability to control our message was non-scalable. It was controlled through three television networks, magazines, print. So it was very attuned to the day. I could create a television commercial and drive demand. And about 15 years ago, I created a platform called the New Four Ps of Marketing, which was based on the advent of technology emergence, that the new four Ps one was about predictive modeling, and the other, was about personalization. This idea that data and big data at the time had scaled enough that allowed us to move to understand what was happening at a consumer level. The others was the advent of the social networks, is being able to create peer-to-peer connections and participation. So these new dynamics changed the original four P's. So, give you an example. I worked with Marriott Hotels and Resorts across the globe for many decades, and we went from being able to control the brand to the number one factor in many of our hotel locations and destinations was TripAdvisor. We didn't control it. And so we had to be prepared to use data and technology to understand the uncontrollable. So about 3 years ago, I was with one of lady that actually hired me right out of Southern Living Magazine to be over here in Atlanta to run technology and analytics for an agency. And she said, Your new four P's models is outdated, John. What's new? What's new?" And I started thinking about it. I was like, "Well, I'll dust it up." And I started thinking about this transformation that was occurring. And in the agency world, we tend to organize around creative, technology, media, and data, right? We silo everything. And I was thinking about the solutions of how that comes to play, and we're in a de-siloed environment. So when I started jotting it down, I said, "What was really the framework of the future of marketing?" And it, of course, as a marketer, you come up with cute names. So I called it the four I's. And in my previous firm, we're very fortunate that high adoption, in the sense of when the four I's are intelligence, individualization, integration, and inspiration. And how they play together is, give you an example, is I can create a model and create an amazing creative concept. But if I don't individualize it to the end guest or visitor, it's lost. The same time, if I don't use that intelligence and that storytelling to create an integrated experience, whether it's in a retail environment or a destination, it's lost. And so this idea of this interconnectivity between data, technology, storytelling, and content is the basis of this model. So ultimately, it pivots from being a brand being able just to push content out to a brand having to work as an operating system in the sense that if I drive somebody to a destination with an amazing inspirational story, but I don't create an individualized experience or an integrated experience that matches what I expected, all the intelligence in the world doesn't matter. So ultimately, the application is I wouldn't say it's a cute way, but it is a new way to understand that technology, analytics, media, and content are all interrelated and not the domain of a creative director, a technologist, a head of analytics, or a CX engineer. They all have to be intertwined.
Great. So let's break down each of the four I's real quick and go through them slowly so the audience can sort of, if they want to take notes or whatever. And then I'll let Adam react because this is the first time he's heard it. I happen to agree with it. I think it's a really good way to articulate a lot of the topics we talk about on this show and a lot of the ways we think. So, all right, first I is intelligence. So what do you mean by that?
Intelligence is, again, I started my career, building sophisticated models that got us from one to all to one to few. Intelligence now, because of technology and AI, and all the AIs are empowered by AI. They are not subservient to AI, and I think that's important. So if you think about intelligence, we're moving into an environment where everybody should be able to understand what happened. Visitations up, clicks are up, likes are down, whatever that is, and be able to react. We have moved quickly into that prescriptive, what should happen, what should it, what's the likely outcome to this, next generation of contextually is how do I guide you and lead you to the action that is best for you. And so when I think about the intelligence eyes, it's not just about reporting and modeling, but it is basically understanding not who came to a destination, but why they came, what's important, what they react, and what should they do next. And I think that's really important because it fuels everything we're doing, think, from a content perspective, a message perspective, how we would create in-destination experiences that are prescriptive as well. We're certainly predictive, but prescriptive in nature. So when I think of intelligence, it's beyond just it's the smart nerds in the back of the room writing models to say what's happening. It is putting that into play that drives the guest experience.
Yeah, and it's a holistic view of that guest, right? So a lot of the work we did with you in a previous life was around our CDP, which is where we're trying to get to that point, right? Beyond prescriptive or beyond predictive into prescriptive. All right, so the second I, which is individualization, is that right?
Yes. This one is there. I love all of my eyes like my kids, but this one I think has the most personalized impact on that guest experience because again, I come back to the brand experience is about making a promise, but the guest or the customer experience is about delivering on that promise. And individualization is the manifestation of that. It's moving beyond just segmentation of here's my core family or here's golfers or this. It is, I am from suburban Atlanta. I want a high-end golf experience. I want a high-end steakhouse experience. And I want to take a private flight versus this is my college buddies And it's all about what happens off the course. And it is responding to dynamic data or intelligence on quasi real time. So it is really that whole idea of going from what we talked about, one to all, one to few. And now technology, data, and AI enablement allow us to truly get to one to one. And I think that's really where I think the power of marketing is individualistic.
Yeah, we talked about this a lot on the show and how it's really about having a conversation, a two-way conversation, having a relationship with the person. And it's not personalization. Personalization was sort of an in-between state, right, where we were using personas and assumptions to treat all people like a specific niche group. Well, this is to an audience of one. That's great.
And I also think one of the powers that we have now with technology frameworks, marketing frameworks, is we used to, 20, 30 years ago, we were really excited if we changed an image just to match a profile. I know at Marriott, we would send out emails that were cutting edge 20 years ago that had a family, a golfer, someone who was a foodie, and we were doing well. Data showed that it was working. But now I, as an individual, also want to build my own experience. So not only is it we're pushing out from a brand, but it is, do we create the environment that I can build my own individual experience in relationship with the brand? The difference between customization and personalization to me.
Yeah. All right. So then the third eye is integration.
Integration is really the one where most brands, in my experience, I've done this a long time, miss the boat. We tend to think non-hierarchical is whether, and I'll actually use a retail example. It's because it's really easy as a marketer and an advertiser to get people to come to a store or to an experience. But then when that promise doesn't meet that reality, I'm never coming back. So I come to a store and the associates aren't well trained. They're not understanding my needs. It goes away. So I had the luxury of many years ago of working with Chick-fil-A, building their raving fan segmentation, being a part of that. And what was really powerful about that, the CIO at the time was so focused on using the power of the data to create an integrated experience online, in the drive-through, in everything they do. And so the brand promise is fully consistent through every touch point. And how often do we go to a store that the photographer or a destination, the photography's great, the promise is great. We come to the destination and it doesn't meet that integrated omni-channel experience, and we're disappointed. And not only do we not come back, we tell others. And so that integration point is really critical to what we're trying to achieve as marketers.
Awesome. And then the final one. So if you want to hit on that last
Yeah,
item.
inspiration. And I've been very clear that this is not just creative, but it's about storytelling, cultural relevance, time relevance. Is if we think about destinations, inspiration isn't about a great tagline, great photography. Is can I see myself there? Can I see bringing my family and being engaged with that? So it brings in the do I have the right intelligence that fuels that individualization? And it's really the manifestation of our output, tied to, again, amazing content, amazing imagery, amazing storytelling, but it has to be driven not by a creative brief and not just by a creative brainstorm, but connection to the other three eyes.
Yeah, and this is where, our listeners have heard us talk a lot about getting attention from people and how important attention is more than awareness today. And I feel like that's where this inspiration is sort of parallel to what we're talking about. So let's take a pause there. Adam, You're being the proxy for the audience today. This is your first time hearing, so I'd love to get any kind of off the top thoughts and anything you want to dig into.
Yeah, I'll give you kind of my full reaction. So step one is I'm a fairly visual person. And so, without kind of seeing the way you've got these four eyes intertwined and how you see things working together, I think that's something that maybe is a gap for me in understanding on a podcast. I think it's a challenge to be able to do that, but just in audio only format, I think that's the one thing I'm struggling with. I agree with what I'm hearing in a vacuum. And so basically, if you can control everything you need to control for those four eyes to make sense, especially on the integration inspiration side, 100%. I think as I listen, as a lot of DMOs are probably listening to this, my immediate question is, well, as a DMO, I don't have the control over the steps of the experience that allow me to fully implement your four eyes strategy, right? So I think that's one of the things that would concern me as a DMO listening is you talked about the drive-through, right? That experience stays consistent all the way until you get your food and even as you're driving away. Well, the DMO isn't even the organization that hosts the transaction in a lot of cases. And so if I'm a DMO, I'm saying, well, how in the world do I get that intelligence to carry through, and how do I gather data every step of the way? The part that I agree with, but I agree with all of it, but these are the questions I would be asking. The part that I agree with you the most on is, as you said, the idea that we're going to silo, digital in one place and creatives in another place and expect that to lead to a successful integrated campaign. There's no way you get to the level of individualization that you're looking for if you're going to have those silos. And in fact, in my organization over the last month or so, we made a big change with our team. And we said that these siloed job descriptions, where you're going to be one person who does one thing, for one, as an agency, there's no way for us to get a return on investment with people that are siloed in that way, because you can't guarantee that the revenue stays consistent by silo for the long term, right? And the future marketer is going to be an AI-enabled marketer that has the ability to execute on multiple marketing tasks. So you think about what needs to happen to get it done, and then you have the ability to leverage technology to execute. That's what tomorrow's marketing department looks like. And so we made the change to no longer have siloed team members who only have a single responsibility. They're going to have to be dynamic and have the ability to evolve and leverage technology to fill in the gaps where they are lacking.
Adam, I absolutely love that. And I 100% endorse that is the role of, for example, a creative technologist, a content expert that relies on the idea it's about individualization. And I do believe that the four eyes play a role internally as well as externally. So if I were to map this out, just think about a almost a four pieces of a pizza, and each eye is in the corner. At the center is total synergistic optimization of the eyes. So if I think about it in an environment, an agency environment, or a client environment, the further you are as a subject matter expert on the extreme of the pie towards the crust, you better have a skill that is best in class as a subject matter expert, because my expectation in the future of it, my analyst should have as much influence on the creative and the content as the designer, because they're closer to, the data. And so I love what you're saying is this idea of the marketers of the future are going to have a kind of a spider web of this, but they better be able to touch all the areas.
So Adam, let me ask you a question. Are you, because one way to interpret what you said is that you feel like marketers are going to be more generalist and less specialist. Is that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you still see a need though for specialists within your agency?
Are you asking me right now, or are you asking me 10 years from now?
Well, both. Where are
Because
we today and where are we heading?
everything that relates to AI, there's going to be a path and there's a bridge that needs to happen. So whether we're talking about predicting hurricanes or whether we're talking about how to leverage AI in a marketing team, right now you still need subject matter experts that have a specific discipline and can leverage AI to get there. I don't believe that in 10 years you're going to need somebody to understand the deep ins and outs of placing buys on Meta versus the Google platform. I think they're going to be able to say, AI tool A, place the most optimal buy for this outcome, and it's going to happen. People are no longer going to be paid for what they do. They will only be paid for how they think in 10 years. I have no question of that.
And can I add on to that? I love that. And I also think, as Mark, professional services agencies, partners, we're also going to be paid on outcomes. And so it's this differentiation is the old formula in a professional services organization is billable rate times number of hours equal here. I'm going to charge you. It presents huge opportunities for the professional services market to say, I'm willing to put my thinking, my technical acumen on the line to drive outcomes.
And this is where I get really nervous, though, with one of the I's, and that's individualization. Because in the destination space, I think this individualization, because of the structure of the organizations, is going to be very difficult. So if I start to say, I'm going to be able to create individualized experiences for every single potential leisure guest that comes to the destination, that is a promise that's going to be very difficult to deliver on unless there's a continued evolution of technology.
And
I don't know if I
I
agree with
would
that.
agree. Having worked again in destination marketing, both on the supplier side and the destination side, it is absolutely a different hurdle than being a retail organization with a private label credit card and an app. And Chick-fil-A has an advantage over other organizations. But I do think because most of the time in destinations, our customers are different than our visitors. And so the four I's also applies to our customers, the hoteliers, the restaurants, the entertainment. And so by being able to also work with them to say, let us help you in destination, whether it's a shared platform or it is advice and guidance or it is that ability to serve that stakeholder network, I think that's another application of this framework is because it allows us to take the individual stakeholder ecosystem and say, where is our opportunity to, again, as a destination, if we elevate the traveler experience, everybody benefits.
And that's where I would push back on you a little, Adam, because I think it's imperative and it's maybe essential that DMOs get further down the value chain, right? I think we are more invested in the success of the actual experience today, and will be even more so in the future than we've ever been. Because as we sort of lose some of the monolithic gathering places like a DMO website, as potentially as our owned assets like our own social media pages become less relevant, which they inevitably will, then we've got to double down on brand. And we've talked a lot on this podcast about how, in my mind, the brand is, you call it the sum of all the touch points, and I call it the sum of the difference between the expectation and the experience of the touch points. So to me, where my head's going as a president of a DMO is we've got to do a better job training our members, right? Making sure that the frontline workers are providing a, not necessarily a standard, but a level of experience that is better tomorrow than it
Okay.
was today. I think we're going to have to spend more time with our municipalities on things like public safety, on things like code enforcement. So I'm spending a lot of time just thinking about what does that look like down the road? Like, what relationships do we need? What work product are we producing beyond the marketing? And it's different, right? We're going to have to be a convener. We're going to have to be a negotiator. We're going to have to be the sort of referee between different stakeholders in a community that maybe don't see things eye to eye. So I think our focus has to continue to shift, not just from away from marketing, because I think we need to continue to do marketing, but I think it shifts hard into the product and the experience itself.
Yeah, I think I can see clearly maybe where the disconnect is between what I'm saying and what you're saying, because I'm talking about the ability of influ or excuse me, individualizations to influence the purchase decision, and it's going to be really difficult at that point to let individualization lead to the transaction with the current tech stack. I agree with you 100% that the DMO has an incredible ability to influence the individualization of experiences that people have in the destination, and that includes influencing your stakeholders, educating the frontline employees, all the things that you said. So I see that disconnect, and I can see why you disagree with me on that point
Right,
for
but
sure.
we've got to be the bastion there, because what you're saying about us not having control over the individual, let's say the booking process, right, the planning and booking process, is the same that's going to happen to the individual businesses. Like 5 years from now, are you going to be going to an individual hotel site to book your hotel, or are you going to be telling an LLM like of choice to, hey, curate an experience for me based on what you know and
Well,
book it for me, yeah?
and first of all, my LLM will be named Stuart, and I will just be bossing it around, telling it to go do tasks for me all the time.
Whatever floats your boat, man.
But you reckon it will listen?
Well, based on data, I would say no.
That's funny. You're ganging up on me. I'm not used to this. Cute. But
But
you
well,
go
I'm
ahead,
gonna
John.
come back into, I've had the privilege too of vetting this framework with some really cool people in destination marketing. And one of my really good friends just retired as a chief people officer for Hersh and Family Entertainment. And he took a lot of the concepts that I had created over the years and turned it on its head and made it an internal and hiring and an in-destination approach. So give you an example is he I had created something called its really sophisticated name was called the Cube. And it was basically the ability to dimensionalize behaviors, attitudes, relationships, and individual data points for marketing to create the next best action. He took that and he said, I'm going to look at how I staff and hire at different places. So he was telling me he took that framework in Dollywood, and to maximize the guest experience, he would put different people at different parts of the park based on using this idea of I'm going to create an individualized guest experience based on this framework.
I like
Yeah,
it.
that's neat. I mean, I get what Adam's saying about it's hard to fully implement this framework, being that we're not in control of the full stack, right? And I think what you're giving there is an example of someone that does control more of the physical experience. And I
Well,
think I would say to Adam, we've got to, as DMOs, we've got to step back and say, if this is a framework that works in general, then how do we become more influential throughout the stack so that we can not necessarily own it the whole way, but that we can get alignment throughout the community on this approach? And it doesn't have to be as boiled down as the four eyes. It could
yeah.
be in a more broad sense, like an actual community-wide strategic plan that it involves economic development in your local municipalities and all your other stakeholders. But I think just thinking about things through the lens of how have things changed since the four Ps, I mean, obviously they've changed dramatically. Expectations have changed, the media landscape has changed. We talk about that ad nauseum on this show. And so to still manage a DMO through the lens of the four Ps, not that I know what people are specifically doing that, but even from the lens of we're just marketing organizations, I think is missing the point.
It also, if we matrix it, again, against the entire destination ecosystem of, that pre-arrival, the, looking, planning, in destination, post-destination, all of those give us an opportunity to understand how the various stakeholders in the community play a role at every step of that, the guest journey. And I think as DMO leaders, we have an opportunity, if not an obligation, to say it's not about what just happens at your hotel the 5 nights these guests are here. It influences everything in our destination, and we spend a lot of money to get that first visit. It's a whole lot better to get one more night while they're here, one more dollar while they're here, and one more return at a smaller frequency or recency that again will drive the destination. I think we're in a great spot to help educate and drive and prove the concept.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think I would just, I'm going to push back on myself now a little bit, which is, I should just do a show where I argue with myself the whole time. But I would say, based on the feedback that you gave me, Stuart, number one, I see this as superior to the four Ps. I most definitely do. Number two, even though there's all these challenges that I identified that destinations may have in attempting to implement this, I think this is one of those situations where you have to move forward, press forward, and have faith that you're going to find it along the way, as opposed to waiting to start until you have every question answered and all the little nooks and crannies figured out. Like I think we have to move forward in evolving from where we've been from a marketing perspective, even if we don't have all the answers ahead of time. And so that would probably be my counter to myself is, if you're 80% there on this framework and you believe that this framework is the right way to manage holistically your marketing activities, go for it. And the remaining 20% will fill in the gaps along the way.
That's great. Adam, do you want to argue again with yourself for arguing with yourself?
Yeah. And that being said, no, I'm going to let you guys participate in the discussion
I
now.
think, Adam, I think it's really, it's a, that's what I think we want you to take away, definitely. And that's why I've been very clear that it's not a product. It's a framework. It's a roadmap in a sense is that it's dynamic and depending on where you are is you may not have any first party data, but have an amazing integration experience. So it gives you a place to say, maybe we should focus here on just gathering a little bit. So definitely think momentum is imperative, and not letting perfect get in the way of good is also really something that I would stress.
Yeah, I've always been a big, I mean, anyone that knows me, like I'm a big fan of building the plane while you're flying and sort of figuring out and pivoting. I think that's more important now than ever because of the uncertainty that we have. Like I don't think in at least in my career, the 20 odd years that I've been in the marketing world, I've never been more uncertain about the future than I am right now in terms of the disruption that's coming and what it's going to look like 5 years from now. Like I think we've had disruptions before. We probably underestimated the impact mobile would have. We probably underestimated the impact that social would have. I think we're probably underestimating the impact that AI is going to have, even though we all acknowledge that it's going to be transformative. And so thinking through what does a world potentially look like where if we follow current trends to their logical conclusion, consumers are going to want to do what's easiest and simplest for them with the best outcomes, the least friction. And there's a world where DMOs are completely cut out of that equation, you know? And so we got to figure out, well, what does that mean for us? What do consumers continue to want to need? What will never change? And how do we serve those things? So I think the four eyes is a good at least starting point to begin to explore some of those questions.
And yeah, I know, kind of getting to the end, and I look at this when I map this out is AI, I mentioned AI enablement because AI as marketers is going to happen with us or to us. And when we look at the ability to understand what we can do is how can AI create efficiency, effectiveness, or economic gain? And I think when we look at it through that lens, overlaid by the idea it's all about the guest experience, it just creates that prioritization of investment or opportunity.
And these are four great places to be investing and evaluating opportunity. Couldn't agree more, John. Thank you for being here today. Any final thoughts before we sign off? Anything we didn't uncover or
No,
dial
I
in?
really appreciate it. I think it's an important narrative. I think in the last 5 weeks, I've talked to about 80 different people, just kind of vet things. And your gut, Stuart, Adam, are right, is we're all struggling with what do we do, but the exponential impact of this is far greater than what I experienced when digital came out, when social came out, when mobile came out, when big data came out. This disruption is going to create opportunity, but also chaos. And I think if we're prepared to navigate that with our stakeholders, we're going to win.
Yeah, and I think this is the first time we're going to have to bring our stakeholders along with us. You know, we sort of didn't feel like, I mean, some DMOs did, but for the most part, most DMOs didn't feel like they were, it was their responsibility to get their stakeholders onto mobile or get their stakeholders onto social. And we may have nudged them, but it wasn't like a quintessential cornerstone of what we did. I think with AI, we have to be an active participant and a partner with our membership, because otherwise our destinations are going to get left behind and their businesses are going to get left behind. So thank you for bringing this to us, John. John, if they want to reach out to you and learn more about you and what you have going on at IL2, how can they do that?
Absolutely. Just send me a note, john.gardner@il2.com. It's a letter I, the letter L, the number two. Would love to hear from anybody out there. But definitely appreciate this conversation. Would love to come back on and have 45 minutes just on why The Empire Strikes Back is the best Star Wars movie.
Oh, that's just dirty to drop that like with a minute left, and it's clearly wrong. I Return Jedi is a superior movie in every
Well,
regard.
it's
I
kind of
would debate
like
it.
where we are in travel is we have to be non-glossy. We have to be authentic to our customers, and The Empire Strikes Back does that far better than Return of the Jedi. But let's to be continued.
I'll just
Well, and I
say
thought,
triple
go
prong
ahead.
finale, and then I'll drop the mic. That's all I have to say. Adam,
As long as
go.
wherever they're going, they're driving the Starship Enterprise, I think it's a great movie.
Yeah, you did the joke once. It worked. I don't know if repetition makes it funnier or not, but Adam, if they want to find you, where can they
Yeah,
do it?
I've got two things that I just want to briefly say. It took us 20 years to get from smartphones and social media to where we are today. And at the acceleration that's happening today, that timeline for that level of technological evolution is going to be much more truncated, and I think we've got to change. So that's number one. Number two, we talked about how the agency structure needs to change based on siloed job descriptions. And it always hits the agencies before it hits the internal marketing departments. So if you think you're going to be immune to it as a destination, is how your marketing departments need to be structured, it's coming for you shortly after it comes for the agencies. So I would say marketing teams all need to start training on how to be cross-functional and AI-enabled across the board, and I think it's going to help a lot. You can
Yeah.
find me on Tourism IQ, adam@thebrandrevolt.com, or on LinkedIn.
Thank you, Adam. If you've enjoyed this show, please leave a review, comment, like. If you want to put a comment about why Return of the Jedi is better than Empire Strikes Back, we'll read it out on the show as well. But thank you for joining today. If you want to reach me, it's stuart.butler@visitmyrtlebeach.com, or you can hit me up on LinkedIn. And until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks, everybody.
It's got the greatest space battle in all of Star Wars. It's got the greatest lightsaber battle in all of Star Wars. And it's got the greatest ground battle of all of Star Wars. So, how is Return of the Jedi not the best of the Star Wars movies?